Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Richards Report where I do a reload. It's a podcast episode that I released back in mid-2019 and I wanted to bring it back to the top of your feeds on the odd chance you missed it the first time around. It's with Nick Hungerford, the founder of Nutmeg, a robo-advisor in the UK. And the reason why I want to re-release it is that a lot has happened since we recorded it. In particular, Nutmeg was recently purchased by JP Morgan for a reported £700 million, which at the time of recording in Aussie dollars is about $1.3 billion. So even if you listened to it a few years ago, you might get a lot out of listening to it again. In the episode, Nick talks about the ups and downs of starting Nutmeg and the stresses along the way, in particular, leading a startup when the funds are getting low and the pains and stresses of raising money and funding rounds are building up. It's interesting to listen to it knowing what we know now. It really makes the discussion interesting to know that the years of sacrifice and hard work, what it led to. But before we get into that, I've signed up to be an ambassador to support the great work that the Fred Hollows Foundation does to help restore sight to the needlessly blind. In August of this year, the foundation will be running Fred's Big Run, a virtual challenge where throughout August you can run or walk your challenge distance. I've signed up to do it and I'm aiming to run at least 100Ks in the month, and guess what? I want you to be involved too. I've put together a Richards Report team for anyone and everyone that would like to step up with me and give this a go. Don't worry, this isn't some competitive group trying to race each other. It's just about getting a group of us together, supporting this great cause, and hopefully getting fit along the way. It doesn't need to be running 100K in a month too. It could just be walking, say, 50K in a month. It's all about getting out and getting moving. Some of you are probably thinking about signing up and joining me, but the self-doubts and what-ifs have already begun to creep in and holding you back. Well, don't listen to them. Often the hardest part in doing something like this is simply starting. So back yourself and join the Richards Report team. Hopefully, we can have some fun along the way, get fit, and raise some much-needed funds. If you're interested in finding out more and joining the team, go to fredsbigrun.org and search for the Richards Report team, and I'll also have a link to that in the episode description. As always, the usual disclosures, this episode is just for educational purposes only and does not qualify as financial advice, and people may hold positions in the companies discussed. And of course, there's a timestamp on the discussion in this episode where it first occurred back in mid-2019. Okay, that's enough of a build-up. Let's get into the good stuff. My name is Ted Richards. You're listening to The Richards Report. And here is my discussion with the founder of Nutmeg, Nick Hungerford.
You're listening to The Richards Report, where we will speak with investment experts from around the country. We will cut through the jargon to allow you to make more insightful investment decisions for your future. This is the Richards Report.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for chatting today.
Thanks, Ted. Really excited and appreciative of you having me on.
Nick, I read that your initial idea to start a robo-advisor all started during your time studying at Stanford. Can you please tell us a bit about that story and what the catalyst was?
Yeah, it wasn't actually an idea to start a robo-advisor at all. Not that we knew what a robo-advisor was then, so I wasn't trying to start it. I guess I just didn't really know what it was, and it wasn't really the plan. The original plan was to build a dating website for clients or potential clients and financial advisors. It was amazing to me that some of my classmates, who were extremely high potential students, and I think might be classed as you could reasonably expect them to be quite wealthy in future years, couldn't find someone to help them with their money management. So I had the idea that we should build some psychological tests and find the ideal managers for the ideal clients. And unfortunately, that proved to be a terrible idea, or maybe fortunately, as the way things worked out. And the reason it was terrible is because, despite all the psychological tests that we put together and sort of good murmurs and sort of thoughts and feedback from the financial advisors, when they actually came to fill it in, what happened was they put it as wide as possible just to attract as much of an asset base as possible, rather than thinking about the individual clients they might want. So it proved to be, you know, probably a decent idea with terrible execution or the inability to execute. And through that process, we learned that actually most of the portfolio management services are pretty similar. You know, people like to adopt a core satellite approach or a, you know, beta with a little bit of alpha approach. And
you come from an investment management background too.
Yeah, sorry, excuse me getting into the story. It always makes me a bit emotional. I had come from an investment management background, which I think is why my classmates were picking on me to help them manage their money. You know, it just felt like we could do this, you know, as something as simple as me putting a spreadsheet together and people copying me. And that was the start of sort of online discretionary management, if you like. And I think in about 2013, 2014, one of the American companies that sprouted up as a consequence of us all starting this idea, coined the term robo advice, and that's how that came about. But before that, we were just talking about digital investment management, which is not half as trendy as robo-advice, obviously.
Well, on the term robo-advice, what's your thoughts of that term? Because without anchoring you, personally, I'm not a big fan of it.
Well, it's fun, isn't it? Because obviously we're both quite involved in the business that sort of chooses what to call itself rather than the other way around now. You know, I feel that I like it and I don't like it. I like it because it implies speed, efficiency, low cost. You know, I think the mechanics of the robo word are good. What I don't like about it is it implies lack of service or impersonal service. And actually, you know, you can't get away with that when you're managing people's money. You can have a really good interface, which is very intelligent. But if it doesn't know when to speak to people or doesn't distribute the right content at the right time or can't empathize, then it's always going to struggle. Money is such an emotional, visceral subject that involves many different permutations. And, you know, when you're single, it's one thing. And when you're married, it's another. And when you have children, it's another. And when you're a grandparent, it's another. So that's what I don't like about robo. I wish there was some snazzy way we could say sort of tech-enabled, you know, tech-empowered financial advice, but I'm not that smart, unfortunately.
But before we get into your great story about starting Nutmeg and where it's grown to today, with so much hard work goes into the big complex things like building the technology and the infrastructure for online businesses like Nutmeg. But it's also hard to come up with something like the name too. So how did you come up with the name?
Well, again, I have to, you know, refer you to people much smarter and deeper thinking than me. So our first two employees, if you like, part of the founding team, really, were designers, also based or educated in California. And we were going with the holding name of Hungry Finance, which is just a sort of play on my surname. And they insisted that, you know, this would be a really important thing for us, is, you know, to think of the right name. And we came up with hundreds. You know, I think there's definitely some evidence that doing this after a few drinks is a good process for creativity. In the end, we ended up with 528 names on our Google spreadsheet. And it took about 8 months through user testing, focus groups, surveys, etc., to find one name that ranked more than 50% for trust. And that was a measure that we really wanted to, you know, to stand out on. And that name was Nutmeg. You know, and Nutmeg has an amazing story when it comes to the resonance with what we were doing. Because back in the 17th and 18th century, nutmeg was the most valuable spice in the world. It was, you know, considered an absolute delicacy. And in fact, the ship workers in Liverpool and New York weren't allowed pockets in their trousers, for fear that they might steal a nutmeg and that would have been enough for them to retire on. So obviously then nutmeg was only available to the rich, and now it's available to the poor. If I say poor, I just mean, you know, it's an everyday person. That was a terrible choice of choice of words. And if we can have a drum roll, please. That's what Nutmeg has done for wealth management. It's it's turned it from something that was exclusive to the wealthy to someone that now everyone can benefit from. I'm really proud of that. But in the surveys, not many people knew that story. In the surveys, it came back as the name of my first pet, or an association with family and Christmas, or if you're a soccer fan, Nutmeg is the act of putting the ball between the opponent's legs and running past them. And so it just ranked really highly. And the guys did an amazing job over 8 months, weeding out all the names. And probably their hardest job was, was moving me away from names which I had got deeply committed to. Some of them were absolutely terrible. Looking back on the list, yeah.
Well, it's funny you share your story about Nutmeg, and I think it's a fantastic name. Six Park was named after one of the founders who's got a beach house at Six Park Avenue. For him, it's the feeling of family being safe and secure, which resonates, and that's the story of ours. But I was unaware of that Nutmeg story. Nick, moving along, investing is often 10 or 20 year investment, even more. But it's funny how important non-investing things like a user experience is when someone logs into their account. Can you tell us your thoughts on UX, UI, and any of the learnings you can share from your experience in this area?
It's really funny with money, because what we've found is that you actually can't predict whether a quick, clean, simple UI helps people believe that your product is, very, very slick and good, or whether something very complicated that takes a long time actually engenders trust a bit more. And the reason for this when it comes to money is that people like to feel that something significant is happening. And if you go to a financial advisor, part of their genius is just how long it takes. Because once you've sat through two meetings with a financial advisor and signed 60 forms and looked up all the details that you need to give them, goodness knows, you're not going to want to go to another one.
Well, you've got a lot of sunk costs.
Right, exactly. So you've started this process and, often you might say, not sure about my financial advisor, but going to another one is just such a tough decision, which is really absurd when you think about, what a difference in fees might do to your portfolio over the medium and long term, for example. So UX and UI and getting it right is very tricky when it comes to money. There is one secret, though, and that is the concept of dig deeper. When people have questions as it relates to their money, they will really lose trust in a site if it doesn't give them the ability to answer that question when they look. And you've got to therefore have an incredible resource of Q&A, whether it's on your app or on your website, so people can dig in and find those answers. You lose trust very quickly if people think that you're hiding something. So it's a very interesting challenge getting the UX and the UI right when it comes to money matters. Not as simple as other things where people just want to get it done as quickly as possible, like booking a hotel or a flight. But one that intellectually is quite stimulating.
Yeah, well, it's a high consideration item as opposed to just buying a book online or a flight, which we all do from time to time.
Yeah, but Ted, you can say that, right? But how often do people go to interview two IFAs or financial advisors versus how often when you're going out for dinner, do you look at a couple of restaurant options? And this is what's so, amazing about this decision. It's one of the most important decisions you're ever going to make in your life. And yet you're likely to go with the first person you land on. And when you go out for dinner, you're probably reading reviews from a couple of different sites or at least a couple of different restaurants. And it's just dinner. And I think, we just have no comprehension in finance yet how to get around that issue, how to make sure that people are making the right choices. Because it's hard.
I can remember reading recently about the three most important decisions we make in life we don't get to practice. And one is who we marry, another is the mortgage, and the other is our retirement savings, which is consistent with what you just mentioned there. Nick, I also read that making it easy for clients to withdraw their money was actually a good thing. Can you please tell us a bit about why that's the case, as so many in the industry, as we know, do the opposite?
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is, I need to give all credit to this to my good friend and advisor, John Beshears, who was a professor at Stanford at the time and is now working at Harvard. He told us that, you know, if you put up barriers to people, they will see you like they see the incumbents. There'll be a suspicion that you've got something to hide, that you need to, you know, you're somehow, you know, needing to trap them in, I think is, you know, it's probably the word trap. And actually, if you give people the option and they know that they can take out their money at any time, then whilst some people may do that for very good reason, if you're saving for a house, then you need the house deposit. If you've come to retirement and it's time to spend some of your hard-earned cash. But actually, the ability to take money out any time means that people don't have to worry about it. And generally, they will trust you more. Again, it's a quirk of finance that people will sign papers with, you know, with financial advisors who charge them exit fees. I mean, can you imagine, you know, someone actually doing that? And yet it happens all the time. So for us, we try and make it as easy as possible. And that's an effort to say to people, it's your money, it's not our money. We will be stewards and custodians, and we will treat it with, you know, all the care that it deserves. But ultimately, it's yours.
I totally agree. And sometimes when I'm speaking with clients, they can't believe that we don't have exit fees and money's back in their account 2 days later. There's no, there's none of these lags that they've become accustomed to. But before I go to the next question, we should do a shout out to John Beshears, your lecturer over at Harvard, who listeners may be aware, I spoke with a couple of episodes on behavioral economics. So if you haven't heard those episodes, I highly recommend you subscribe and check out the back catalogue. And when John dropped some knowledge bombs for everyone on behavioral economics.
Yeah, it's just an incredible insights. I'll give you an example for Australia on that topic, which I'm sure is quite pertinent. And that's with property versus equities, because, you know, property is arguably, according to some academic papers, the most intrinsically volatile asset there is. And we know that there's huge transaction costs going in and out of property. Yet, precisely because it's so hard to go in and out, people will often say, oh, property's been a better investment because they've just stuck with it. Right? And if the same happened with shares, if we didn't see market movements on the news every day, if we said, you know, if suddenly the news in Australia started reporting on Ted's house and how far up and down that was moving, you'd probably be a lot more worried about property. So there is this, you know, there is this trouble with portfolios that there's so much psychology to overcome. You know, if you don't let people take their money out, then they start panicking.
And Nick, you do know the Australian market fairly well. And in Australia, we are obsessed with property. And somehow, and sometimes incorrectly, people can always look to property as an investment as opposed to the benefits of diversifying. Nick, Nutmeg has grown incredibly quickly. How's it going from starting a business all by yourself and along with your co-founders to, you know, to then the next stage to managing a handful of people, then to say over 50 staff, and I'm not even sure what Nutmeg's up to these days. How long did that process take, and how was that whole experience for you? Because as a founder and a CEO, that's a lot of moving parts and a lot of skills required to manage it all.
It is, and I think that there's very few people who, you know, who are very talented at all of those different stages, and I'm certainly not one of those. You have to lean very heavily on your, you know, your co-founders and your early team members and the people around you. It's really important, I say to everybody, to interview lots of lawyers to find someone, not just the first person, but someone you can really, speak to in the dark moments and cry on their shoulders. It's important to have great investors who can help you through the journey and understand that it's not always going to be a smooth ride. It's important to get a good advisory group around you, and also to remember that your friends, you know, are there to support you socially and emotionally as well, and also to take your mind off it a little bit. I remember in the early days of Nutmeg, I was so enthusiastic about it. Just, well, I'm still enthusiastic about it, but at the time, it's all you can speak about. And one of my friends saying to me, "Nick, we love you, but you've got to start talking about something else, because you're just getting boring." And I was, okay, yeah, probably made a really good point here. So I think making sure that there's life outside what you do is critical as an entrepreneur. And the second point I would make on this as a practical tip is as a founder, think about your early stage team and don't try and hide too much, or better word is protect them too much from the ups and downs. At Nutmeg, I was always in the early stages of fundraising, trying to take it upon myself, and that is tough for your health or the stress levels. And someone came to me, one of the early team members, as we were fundraising, and said, "Look, you seem really stressed. We know you're doing fundraising. Why don't you talk to us about it and see how we can help?" And at the time, I thought, "Oh my God, if I tell them, we're going to be out of cash soon, then they're all just going to leave." But as they kindly explained to me, you join an early stage company knowing it's an adventure, and actually being part of that adventure is what you sign up for. I don't think it's everyone's cup of tea to hear, but I think for most people, who are involved with that kind of company, it's a really great experience to be in the loop. So I started t telling people in the company much more about what we were going through, and that helped me share the story and share the journey. So, just remember that, first of all, it's not all about you and the company, and that'll help you get some perspective from the outside as everything grows. And second, not to take it all upon yourself.
Well, that's some great insight there. I think it was Elon Musk or someone like that that said being a founder of a startup is similar to chewing glass while staring at the sun or something like that, because it's definitely a roller coaster. I guess being the founder of a startup has its big ups and downs. You mentioned investors, and I wouldn't mind just touching on that, because having a good idea for a business is one thing, but raising money from other investors is another. How did you find this process?
I was a slight pause there as I sort of curl into my shell and start crying. Raising money is incredibly painful, and anyone who's been through it will understand this. It takes longer than you think. Even if it's a competitive process, it's hard, and you're not just raising money, for the company, which is your baby and you believe in. You're also raising money for the team, for their livelihoods, for your reputation. There's so many factors that ride on this. So, as an investor now, I try and walk with the founders in that journey, and try and remember just all the emotional side of it, as well as the financial and the practical side of it. There are, and I've been so lucky, there are great investors out there who have made it easier for fundraising, and they walk you through the process, communicate with you well, etc. And I think they're a credit to the VC industry when they do that. But yeah, if I'm not sure. I've had Elon's experience of eating glass whilst staring at the sun. That sounds like something he did at Burning Man. But I suspect it gets somewhere close.
So just to give a bit of context to your journey that you've been on, what was the size of the first funding round?
It's about £800,000, about $1 million. Yeah, we were very grateful to those early investors, Pentec, Tim Draper, and some angels, for their support. And it would never have happened without them.
And as hard as it might have been, and it would have been to raise that 800,000 from early stage investors, to think that Nutmeg has just completed a 60 million funding round, which is huge. And not only that, with Goldman Sachs participating, How was that moment for you personally, considering the journey that you've been on along with your other co-founders?
I think it's, you know, it's a great credit to the, you know, to the team leading Nutmeg, and they should, you know, they should certainly be, you know, be praised for the efforts to achieve that. I don't know if everything is you know, is sort of rosy in the emotions when you raise money. And I'm not just talking about the dilution, but
does it come with, you know, pressure?
I think it does come with pressure to deliver. But also as a founder, despite Amazon not being profitable for 20 years and Tesla, you know, all these wonderful companies, Snapchat, etc., I still feel that you know, the longer you raise money, the more you have to prove the business model. You know, are people going to pay for it? Are people willing to be customers for the long term, etc.? When it's like this round was for Nutmeg, when it's about fueling further growth, you know, it's very easy to understand and be enthusiastic about. But I try to encourage entrepreneurs not to think of funding as a vanity metric. Same thing about how many staff you've got. You know, not having 3,000 staff is not necessarily a good thing. So whilst it's definitely a sign of progress, I don't want anyone listening to think that you know, we're any less humble because we've raised a lot of money. You know, there's still a lot of work to go, and you know, as you say, we've got to pressure and to prove ourselves, and ultimately to make money and to create value for our shareholders.
Out of interest, in your opinion, why did a large international bank like Goldman Sachs invest in a robo advisor?
Oh, it's all the founder. They just love the founder. No, I think there's plenty of reasons. You know, but let's think about the specific Goldman Sachs strategy at the moment. They've made a conscious effort to move more towards the retail customer, and they've had an incredibly successful opening salvo with Marcus, yeah, their deposit account.
For listeners that may not be aware, Marcus is a bit more than an app, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, it's a cash deposit account, and they're paying a very good rate of interest, and it's a fantastic way to save. But there are next steps to that. You know, there are next steps in terms of lending, there are next steps in terms of saving, and there are next steps in terms of investing. So Nutmeg is a natural partner to help Goldman Sachs with that. I think that's one reason. The second reason is that large investment banks, or just generally banks like Goldman, have been around for a long time, and they will be around for a long time. And there's lots of fintech which is very good, very fast, but not necessarily something that's built for the long term. And when it comes to investing, everything we preach, everything we talk about is about long term. You know, ride the volatility of the markets. You know, keep the faith, you know, through the ups and the downs, save more, compound it up. So I think there's a natural cultural fit between strategic investors and businesses like Nutmeg, which perhaps doesn't exist with other businesses, which quite rightly have a more short-term strategy.
Nutmeg and other robo-advisors in the US have really democratized wealth management, and you've had a real impact helping so many people with their investments. Over your journey with Nutmeg, have there been any client stories over the years that you can share?
I think you know, in aggregate, the thing that I've enjoyed the most is people telling me about their investments in the stock market for the first time. You know, people who have never had that opportunity before. I think that's, you know, that for me is a real positive. Although, you know, it is painful when people invest and the markets go down and they lose money, and, you know, it's very hard not to take that personally.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. I feel that too.
You know, people do. But I think in terms of specific examples, I have to, you know, probably for safety as well, draw on sort of family here. And, you know, I do have cousins and I do have aunts who for one reason or another have always been interested in finance, but their providers have not, you know, showered them with information or made that information necessarily understandable. And I think, you know, at Nutmeg, we have done everything we can to make things transparent, and it's been a really great, you know, experience to hear those family members saying, you know what, like, I understand my money now. You know, I can see clearly what's happening. I don't necessarily always appreciate it. I understand how much I'm paying. You know, I understand the relationship I have with risk, and how it makes me feel. And actually, you know, solving those situations or hearing them say that when you know how complicated things were beforehand is a real source of satisfaction.
Yeah, I totally agree. Increasing engagement, increasing transparency, educating people. I think it's fantastic for people because so many have that ostrich effect where they're just head in the sand a bit. Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've actually stepped away from Nutmeg after an incredible journey. Before we move on to what you're up to now, any idea of how many clients there would be at Nutmeg right these days?
I think it's close to 65,000 odd. So I think that makes Nutmeg certainly one of the top five wealth managers in the UK, which is a great achievement by the team.
Yeah, well done. You're now based in Singapore, and apart from the living next door to my brother and sister-in-law, and shout out to them both, but you're involved with a VC as well, Portage. Can you please tell us a bit what you're up to now?
Yeah, so my co-founder at Nutmeg started a new company, and I support on that side, and try and be involved with that. And then I also, as you say, do investing for Portage, which is a fintech venture capital fund based in Canada. It's a wonderful privilege to be able to speak with entrepreneurs and help them with their businesses, and not something I take lightly at all. I think it's it's a real honor. So we are looking to deploy some capital in Australia, and if you if any listeners have any good fintech business ideas, we cover banking, wealth management, asset management, and insurance, then they should definitely hit me up on LinkedIn. So really excited about where that's going. Lots of new projects in the works, and hopefully we'll also be able to help represent my country of birth, England, and Great Britain post-Brexit, to continue to be the centre of the world for fintech.
Nick, thanks so much for the time to have this chat. You've been incredibly humble considering this fantastic journey that you've been on with Nutmeg from starting it to where it is today. And I'm sure the next chapter with Portage is going to be equally exciting. Thanks very much for the chat.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much, Ted.
Okay, that's it for another episode of the Richards Report. As always, please share with a friend, a mate, a family member, or even better, I'd really appreciate a ratings on iTunes. See you next time on the Richards Report.